What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line, I got my pick and pop partner, Josh Cohen. How you doing?
Hey, we're almost 1 month away. I'm excited.
A month and a week, man. Counting them down.
Count down those seconds. What is it at, really, getting Rush? What's it at?
We're still in the millions. Still in the millions.
It's like 2 million.
Damn it. I thought we got down to the 100,000s. Damn it.
In your dreams. Banger in the paint. Rajan Walia, how you feeling?
I'm feeling good, but I'm also feeling a bit anxious because I don't want to come to the 11th hour and the 59th minute and then Adam Silver is like, shit, you know what? We pull the plug and like all my hopes and dreams for the next 3 months are gone.
Yeah, that's so sad. What do you think the likelihood is that they don't go through with this?
The likelihood is probably 25%.
Okay, Josh?
I was going to say the exact same thing, so...
Yeah.
I'll go with 40%. Not that it really means anything.
No. 1%, Bob.
Like, $1.
Yeah, pretty much, man. Except that $1 is multiplied by like a billion. Hence why they got to push this through no matter what. Unless LeBron, Giannis, and Kawhi all get COVID at the same time. They got to
push this through. Well, I think it's June 24th. It is the last date that players can tell teams whether or not they're going to be going or not. So we had two players today tell their teams that they're not going to be going. So I think there's going to be a lot more in the next day and a half.
Yeah, okay. So follow-up question. How did you feel about Woj putting out all of Trevor Ariza's business in that tweet? Because the first comments I saw were like, yo, why are you going to put all this shit out there? Trevor Ariza's like custody battle is out on Twitter now. So weird.
I feel like somebody besides Woj is going to get famous just knowing which NBA players are planning to have a kid in the next 3 months. They're going to put that list out, and then we're going to find out early, before Woj, that these players are probably not going to end up going to Orlando because they're going to have a kid within the next two or 3 months.
Oh, that's a nice change.
But where the money's at.
But what if you're already in Orlando, and then you find out you have a kid like Fred VanVleet? Don't you just go, like, nuclear?
Well, then your name is Dwight Howard.
If he even shows up.
Or Paul George.
Oh, God. No, please, God, no, man.
I mean, you think you know by now if you're going to have a kid in the next 2 or 3 months, right?
Hey, it might just pop off. Who knows how this thing goes.
True.
All right, let's move on. We're talking about, like, the worst teams in the league, man. I don't really know if I want to do this, but I really think we should talk it through. They've been deemed the Delete 8. They're just deleted right out of the regular season. And let's just start off at the top. Obviously, it's the Golden State Warriors. And by top, I don't mean by the rankings. I just mean who we actually care about. Because the Golden State Warriors are obviously the only team that are really worth mentioning out of this group. You got Steph coming back next year. You got Klay Thompson coming back next year. An addition of Andrew Wiggins, which I'm pretty sure half the league has already forgotten about. And maybe Draymond Green, who might actually pay more attention next year, because he won't just have... I don't know, who's he giving the ball to now? Jordan Poole and... Can you name anyone else on that team?
It's difficult right now.
Marquise Chris? Is he on that roster? Struggling.
Yeah, Chris is there. He's going to be on the roster next year as well.
All right. Well, we named off two guys on the current roster, so that's great. Raj, do you think Klay and Steph come back at... Let's give them like 80 or 90% health next year.
Yeah, I think both of them have a really good chance, especially Klay. He was probably going to be scheduled to be ready to participate in activities probably May, June of this year, not to come back. But now that the league is probably going to restart closer to November, December, he's going to have a full year and a half since the ACL injury. And for someone who's coming off a big injury like that, it'll be good for him to have a lot of reps under his belt and a lot more confidence. So he might come back in like game shape. And Steph obviously was coming back. I think he was one of the first players to actually sit out because of COVID-related illness. It wasn't COVID, but I think he's back. He's ready to play. That team's going to be a handful. They're probably going to end up with a top five pick. And if they can move that pick with Andrew Wiggins, maybe they get another superstar that they're looking for and come back to the playoffs with vengeance.
Who the hell's going to want Andrew Wiggins?
They might want that pick, though.
Oh man, I was waiting for that the entire time.
No, I don't really think that any team is going to take a swing unless they get like the first pick in the draft, maybe. But I mean, the one thing that I think a lot of people are going to be talking about come summertime with Golden State Warriors is their window is very, very small right now in terms of being like a contending team. I mean, nobody really thinks of them right now as a team that can win the championship next year. I mean, it's definitely possible depending on what they do with the rest of their roster. But Steph Curry's 32 years old. He's probably got one to three years maybe left in his prime, depending on if he can keep his body in shape and stay away from injuries. So I think next year is very key. I think next year is going to be one of his last like great years as long as he's able to stay healthy. And going into the draft, if they're going to be a contending team next year, they need a lot of help, especially on the bench with their supporting characters. So they're probably going to be in the trade market with that draft pick, obviously. And I don't think Andrew Wiggins will be involved in that because no team, especially now going into a salary cap that's very unpredictable, no team is going to want Andrew Wiggins for $30 million based on them not knowing what's going to happen the next 3 or 4 years with the cap. So they're going to be looking, I think, to trade that pick for like a mid-level type player. Like one trade idea that was been, bouncing around that I heard about was like the pick for a player like Kelly Oubre. So if they get, the fourth or fifth pick in the draft and get a player like Oubre, and they can make him a starter and then have Wiggins come off the bench as like a guy who just gets buckets, you have something there because then you still have Pascal off the bench as well. So you can have a pretty good seven-man rotation. And then if Marquise Chris continues to develop, maybe it's an 8-man rotation. And then all you have to do is fill out the rest of the guy, rest of the bench from there. So they have some options with, having a really high pick in the draft. And they sort of got lucky in a way that Steph got injured this year because their team wasn't really going anywhere in the first place. They might have been, like an 8th, maybe 7th to 10th seed this year if everyone stayed healthy, if they got lucky. So this is sort of like a San Antonio Spurs, Tim Duncan situation, potentially. Not in terms of who they're going to get picked in the draft, but just having a superstar on your team already and being able to have a high pick in the draft and build your team in a situation where you wouldn't before based on injury.
Are you still not an Andrew Wiggins believer if he's like the fourth or fifth option on the team?
I think the price is the issue. It's not that he can't play a role on a team. He just can't play a role as a $30 million player. Like, the valuation is too high, and it really messes up the roster. Like, if
take the money out of it, right? Take the money out of it. Can he be a guy that just fits in as a fourth or fifth option, as a cutter, when Steph and, Clay get double-teamed? To make the right cuts, make the right basketball plays, and just be a better overall player where he's not the main ball handler. Like, he's never shown that. He's never shown that he's a good off-ball cutter. He's never shown that he can get in the lane, get offensive rebounds, little things,
Yeah, but I think the argument against that is he was put in a situation in Minnesota where he was kind of not told to do everything. He had cap, but he was supposed to be that guy. And now that he's with Steph and Clay, they're going to attract so much attention that he might be able to play off the ball. And I'm going to say one player's name that I think he could duplicate his role. And that player had success with Golden State. And I'm going to say Harrison Barnes. So if he can fill that role and play that position in the 2015 Harrison Barnes role, I think he can work. But again, for me, the issue is the $30 million because it impedes your ability to build that bench.
I mean, the bench is, I don't think they're really trying to push anything behind that bench, right? Like, you're so top heavy with this team. It's similar to how it's been in the past few years. I mean, the focus is just Steph and Clay. The bench is very tertiary.
Yeah, but like, remember 2015, their team obviously had Steph and Clay, younger, not as proven players. But then they had a lot of good pieces around. Like, they still obviously had Draymond, they had Harrison Barnes. And I do see like some similarities in Harrison Barnes and Wiggins' like responsibility on the team. Like, they're not the first or second, even the third option, but they can play a role on defense and facilitating. And then what made that Golden State team just like above and beyond any team that year and for the next 3 or 4 years was their bench was always better than every other team. So even if you can match them starting unit for starting unit, their bench just outplayed you. and they had a lot of veterans. And obviously now, without Iguodala, without David West, Livingston, a lot of those key players that played significant minutes, I think Golden State loses their edge. Like, their starting lineup was amazing, but their bench pushed them over the edge.
Yeah, and again, going back to the cap situation, with them being so far over the cap right now, and, you know, they're going to have certain exceptions to use in the offseason, but will they use those exceptions based on them losing a crap ton of money, based on them not having fans in the arena, in their new arena this year, and they're likely not having it next year either? Are they really going to go that far over the cap plus pay these players that they don't have yet that much more money when you still have, like, Andrew Wiggins on the books and, like, have to pay the luxury tax based on this roster and being a repeater tax team as well? So I don't know if they're going to want to, like, make those margin type signings for $3 to $5 million and just sort of stick with the younger guys in the team. But if you do that, the lesser chance you have to win a championship, because these guys are not experienced. Like, you're going to have Marquise Chris and Eric Pascal playing major minutes in the playoffs for you if you do make the playoffs, and that's not going to be a contending team. And then you might run into issues with, you know, Steph Curry not being happy because his team is not playing to their capability or where he sees them.
I think Steph will be just fine making his $43 million next year.
Yeah, I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, but players get itchy, you know. He still wants to win. And if they're not building a team to win because they have money issues, then who knows what happens.
It's okay, man. They'll keep Damian Lee there. He'll have his cousin or family or whatever that guy is to Steph, and
yeah,
everyone will be happy in Golden State. All right, moving on. Let's go to, okay, do you guys want to talk about the Bulls or the Knicks first? Two equally lost teams.
Don't say equal. The Knicks are on their own level.
Okay, let's go with the Knicks then. Let's talk about this team who struck out on Kyrie and on KD last year. Couldn't bring two stars that wanted to go to New York, right? And now they obviously signed a bunch of power forwards last year to a bunch of contracts that would expire this year. And I'm pretty sure they only have like four or five guys on the books for next year, right? It's not that many. So you're looking at a core of Julius Randle, maybe Taj Gibson is still there. Dennis Smith Jr., maybe? I can't really see what else. I mean,
I think he's got 1 year left. I'm checking right now. But I mean, the biggest thing they have to do is surround RJ Barrett with shooting. Because this year they decided to go all 1990s and surround him with 15 power forwards where he had zero space to move around in the court. So I think the biggest thing with them is just surround him with some younger guys that are able to shoot the ball so he can sort of see where he is in terms of his progression, to see if he's going to be like a lead ball handler or to see if he's like a secondary guy.
Oh, Elfrid Payton. That could be your lead.
You know, I sort of like Elfrid Payton. Even though he's been on like really crappy teams, I think that he has a role in the league. I think he's okay.
He's a mediocre point guard. He's like Jeff Teague, but more athletic.
And more versatile, I would argue.
Yeah, but like that stature of a point guard, for his career at least. So obviously the Knicks now are led by Leon Rose, but they still don't have a head coach. And there's been a lot of talk, you know, we're looking at guys like Tibbs, or JVG, or SVG, all the VGs basically. There's a lot of rumors going around about all these old guys coming into the Knicks, but arguably they might want something newer. You know what I mean? Someone with like a more contemporary mind, if you will, for this team, so that you can actually train RJ Barrett to play contemporary ball rather than just, you know, inside out with their four power forwards.
Just say Jason Kidd, because that's the name I read floating around. I think, honestly, what they're going for is, like, look what happened in Milwaukee. Jason Kidd led that team. He developed Giannis. And then once he left, after, like, 3-4 years, then they made, like, a big jump and ended up winning the conference last year and made it to the conference finals. So, but with the Knicks, there's so many questions. Like, it's so frustrating because now adding coronavirus and COVID to this, the league salary cap and their whole plan of having all this money available this year, where there's not going to be that many players with players that are free agents that are attractive. And now the salary cap's getting lower. So like, I just feel that the Knicks are in a position where they are going to basically redo what they did this year, but maybe not power forwards. Maybe they go with shooting guards. Maybe they go with Paige Drummond. Like, they're just going to end up with a stopgap solution and no real plan forward.
Yo. If they pay...
You know, I can see it. Like, honestly, like, even though it sounds ridiculous, I can definitely see it. I mean, they're, like, one of the only teams with the salary cap space this offseason. And he's probably going to be, like, really cheap on the market since I think there's only, like, what? A minimal amount of teams that are, you know, actually have cap space this offseason.
He's got a player option.
If the cap goes down... Oh, yeah, that's true. Forgot about that.
He's going to opt into his $27 million. Are you kidding me? Come on,
yeah,
man.
I forgot about the player option.
Yeah, and they don't really have any contracts to dump either. I mean, they have a team option on Bobby Portis this year for 15.7, and you know he's gone.
Well, most of the guys they signed are on team options, right?
There's Portis.
Except for Randall.
Yeah, Gibson is on it. Wayne Ellington is gone. I don't know, man. This team is such a mess. Do you think Kevin Knox can be something in the future, Josh?
Nah.
If he goes to the right team, like, he's in a situation, honestly, like, even though you're laughing right now, he looks like the prototypical swing player that could be something in the NBA. Like, his game actually looks pretty smooth, but the problem is he doesn't play any defense, and even though his shot looks really nice, he's got, like, Martell Webster syndrome, where his shot looks really nice, but it never really goes in.
Damn.
So... I love Martell Webster too. Like, the first couple of years he was in the league, like, he was actually a pretty decent shooter, and then he just stopped shooting them at volume, and he never really stayed in the court after that.
Oh man, the disrespect to Martell Webster.
I mean, I think if Kevin Knox went to a good team that knew how to develop him, then I think he could have been a good player, but the Knicks might have ruined him.
Honestly, when I saw him in summer league when I was in Vegas, like, I saw potential in him. I thought he could have had a good role in the NBA. I don't think he was going to be a superstar, but I thought he was going to be a solid, like, 15-5 kind of player. But just seeing his regression this year, obviously the coaching and just the Knicks system and not having any spacing hurt him, but overall his numbers are very bad. And I see a situation where if he doesn't get moved soon, he's just going to slowly fall into the background and end up in the G League.
Or a smart team is going to, you know, pick him up for nothing, trade a second round pick for him. If the Knicks are trying to, like, you know, shed salary at some point the next couple of years, I could see a really smart team snooping in and putting him in their developing system and then him becoming something.
Didn't he just go lottery like 2 years ago?
Yeah, but, you know, there's been many cases like that where a player goes in the lottery and their team doesn't believe in them. They trade them like a year later.
That's harsh, man.
How are you going to go from lottery to playing 18 minutes a game and having regression? Like, it's not like, oh, the Knicks are so talented that he can't get minutes.
No. But it's not his fault they signed, like, 4 or 5 veterans at the same position as him. And you know the way coaches are. They're going to play their vets just so they can keep their job as long as they can.
No. I'm not blaming him. I just think that last year there was something in his game. And this year, even his numbers are down. Like, he's not as active on the floor. Obviously, he's not playing as much. But I just think that if you're a coach, and especially in the Knicks situation, yes, you sign these veterans. Yes, you want to stay somewhat competitive. But he's only started 4 games this year. Last year, he started 57. He's playing 11 minutes less. Like, that just, for me, just doesn't make sense. That's not a good sign. It's a bad sign.
No, it's a bad sign that Knicks are so brutal at, you know, managing their team and coaching their team. I mean, the fact that they chose veterans over playing younger players this season. Like, the biggest crime that New York committed this year was not playing Kevin Knox. It was not playing Mitchell Robinson 30-plus minutes a game and seeing what they had in him. Because when he plays, like, he averages like 4 or 5 blocks a game, and he looks really good out there. He's a rim runner. He's like basically DeAndre Jordan coming up now. So how valuable DeAndre Jordan is in this NBA is to be debated, but I think given minutes, Mitchell Robinson can at least be a double-double guy and, you know, give you good energetic minutes and a guy who can, you know, be a major threat at the rim.
Instead, we had Julius Randle playing the 5. Welcome to the New York Knicks, guys.
Taj Gibson starting. Like, what are they doing?
Oh, man, I love it. Knicks going to Nick. They have to.
They really have no way to get out of this right now either. Like, next year is going to be a write-off for them.
Yep.
So the best thing they can do is bring in a development coach, bring in Kenny Atkinson, you know, and develop RJ Barrett and Mitchell Robinson. And then also, you know, their first-round pick, which will hopefully turn into something this year. like being the Knicks, I think they're going to get the first pick in the draft this year because they didn't get Zion last year. And Knicks fans will be like, oh, of course we get it this year. And then they get some crappy player.
Yo, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show onto all the apps that people like to listen to? How do you make money? The answer was pretty simple for me. I started using Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. So that means you can get paid immediately, like right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading you this ad. It's super simple. So if you always wanted to start a podcast, let's start now. Go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of producers using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. See you soon.
Wow, you just ruined my next spot, man. I was going to say Kenny Atkinson to the Bulls. Let's get Jim Boylan out of there. Him and his dictatorship. No more three-a-day practices. My God. How about a coach that can actually demand respect from his team? A guy that won't run them into the ground? And, you know, Kenny Atkinson is great for player development. Him and his crew. And it'd be perfect. This team is so young. Wendell Carter Jr., that's his name. Zach LaVine, obviously. You got Kobe White, who somehow seemed like he averaged like 40 points a game at one point in this season. I mean, this team has a lot of young talent, and there's no way that they should keep Jim Boylan on this as their head coach, right? Raj, just to have that kind of leader is not really compatible with young players.
Yeah, and I think for the Bulls, this is the perfect time to let Boylan go. I think he's just not connected with the young players, and obviously he works them hard and tries to make them accountable, but we see what happened with the Bulls when they had Tom Thibodeau. Like, it only works so well, and you have to have the right players, and clearly the players aren't responding well to his coaching style. And now that they're on a big break, they're not going to probably resume basketball until December, but they should be training. This would be a great time to bring in a new coach, bring in a new system. They have almost 6 months of training camp, more or less, and really start fresh. And the Bulls are a team where they're not expected to win next year. There isn't this undue pressure that the Knicks always have. Like, the Bulls are expected to take 2 or 3 years before they actually make a playoff run. So I think they should start now. They shouldn't just stick with Boylan. I don't think they're going to get anywhere. And they're really driving their superstars away. And it's not a destination where a lot of superstars want to go. Like, if I'm a top 10 or even 20 or 30 player in the league, I don't want to play under Jim Boylan.
You know, Chicago's sort of like the Knicks in a way over the course of the last 30 years or 40 years. You know, besides MJ and then getting lucky and getting Derrick Rose, their management has been absolute garbage. And their player development also has been absolute garbage. So the Bulls have more talent than the New York Knicks, and they're totally wasting Wendell Carter and Lauri Markkanen. Once again, going back to Kevin Knox, this is like a, you know, more proven version. I mean, these two guys have actually shown flashes of being really good players, unlike Knox. And if they went into a system that actually used, you know, their capabilities, they would be really good. So I predicted the Bulls would be in the playoffs this year if they had good coaching, which they didn't, obviously. But I don't think they're that far off from being in the playoffs in the East. And the East is garbage, as we know, especially in like the lower seeds. So I think if they bring in a good coach like, you know, Kenny Atkinson, like you mentioned, and you have Zach LaVine putting up 25 points a game like he did this year, and Satoransky in a role that makes sense that he played in Washington, and then you get Markkanen and Wendell Carter actually, you know, shooting the ball every once in a while, especially Carter. Like, he barely shot the ball at all this year because it seemed like Boylan was telling him, all you can do out there is set a pick, roll. When you catch the ball, make sure to let go of it immediately and run the pick and roll again. Whatever you do, do not shoot the ball. It was embarrassing. The guy is a good shooter from what he's shown when he actually does shoot the ball and he's got good touch. Everyone expected him to be like Al Horford type. And he's shown that on defense at points, but when you never really are able to do anything on offense, it just brings down your defensive game. So I think they have something there. I'm not sure if both him and Markkanen fit together, which they should find out next year. And if not, they should trade one of them for something decent. But they do have something. They have talent there. They just have to learn how to use it.
But what about our Thaddeus Young minutes?
I like Thaddeus Young too, but again, wrong team. I don't understand why they signed him. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah. What do you think Zach LaVine's ceiling is? Like, who can he emulate? He's obviously an amazing scorer, not really very good defensively. But who, what, like, what, yeah, what would his ceiling be? Danny Granger?
I mean, going into the last couple of years, I thought his ceiling was, like, a really good six man on a good team. And it might still be that. I don't think he's, like, a primary option, but I think he'd be, like, a third option on a good team with his scoring ability. But, again, he has to, like, commit defensively, too. Like, he's never really matured in that way, so.
Damn, that's high praise. Let's go to Atlanta. At least this team has a little bit of more fun that we can talk about. You got Trae Young, obviously, starting All-Star this year, playing in games in Oklahoma right now where no one has a mask on. I mean, that's a great idea. Thanks, Trae Young, for that one. And John Collins, the, I don't want to say it, but the possible HGH user or some sort of banned substance user that got suspended for 25 games last year in a shortened season. My God, that's brutal. And finally, Clint Capella. Clint Capella might be like the perfect type of pick and roll player for Trae Young right now, right? So if you get this team maybe one or two like good, reliable wing players, they could do some damage next year. Potential eighth spot?
Well, I honestly have more faith in the Chicago Bulls than I do the Atlanta Hawks for making the playoffs next year, as long as the Bulls get a decent coach. I think the Hawks are like 4 to 5 good veteran players away from making a playoff run. And they started with Capella, which is good. I've always liked Clint Capella. But I don't know. I just don't really believe in their starting wings, like you said. I think they need to have those guys come off the bench next year and get reliable starters that can play 20 to 30 minutes in certain games and just be like 3-and-D guys and just let Trae Young and, you know, Capella run the pick and roll a lot. And they also need to learn how to use Kevin Huerter more, too, because I don't think he's being used enough in their system overall. I think he can be a really good shooting guard in the league. But I'm not so much a believer yet in, like, Cam Reddish and Hunter. I think Hunter can eventually be a good 3-and-D guy, but he's got a long ways to go. He's got to be more consistent, obviously. But Reddish was, like, all over the place this year. Like, he started off as being the worst shooter in NBA history for half the season. And then he became, you know, a decent player for, like, 10 games. And he shows flashes out there, but I really don't know what he is.
Yeah, I'm a bigger believer in Atlanta than I am the Bulls. I think Atlanta has, on paper at least, the good makeup of a team. They're buying into the system. The young players are actually playing a lot. They're getting more chemistry. They aren't winning many games, but there were many games this season where they did push some teams, and then there were some games where they just got blown out, and that's where the experience of veterans helps. But I do think with one more solid wing player, like he should be a third or fourth option, I think they could be a team that easily makes the sixth or seventh spot in the East. I think they're ahead of Washington. I think in a year from now, they'll be ahead of Orlando. So, yeah, I think they're not that far. I think they have the right pieces. They just need a bit more experience and one more veteran.
I disagree. I think they're at least 2 or 3 years away. And they have to decide what style of play they're going to play to. Because originally they were playing really small ball with John Collins at the five with Trae Young and, you know, three wing players. Do they want to play fast and go that route? Or do they want to have, you know, a 4-5 that's a little more traditional, even though John Collins is a pretty good three-point shooter? At the four, or they want to go with a more traditional line of having him at the four, Capella at the five, and then, you know, shooting guard and small forward. So I think they have to make that decision going forward, like how they're going to play, if they want to play fast or if they want to play slow, because they were one of the worst defensive teams in NBA history throughout like a big portion of the year this year. So I think they really have to like decide what they're going to do going forward, especially on the defensive end. If they're going to play Capella 30 to 35 minutes a game, or if they're going to play him 20 to 25 minutes a game and just play with Collins more at the five. And obviously they have a big decision with Collins too coming up, whether or not they're going to give him a max contract and what position he's better at. Because if you have Clint Capella there for the next 3 years and John Collins is better at the five, then what do you do? Do you trade him for a package and then you're sort of starting over again? So I just don't really know what path they're looking to go forward with.
Well, by getting Capella, you would think that they want to go with something more traditional. And by traditional, we just mean, like, positionally, right? I don't necessarily think that playing a traditional lineup with Capella at your five means that you need to be a slower team. Because Capella can run with just about any other big in the league, man. That dude is fast. He has hands of stone, which I don't like, but dude can get up and down the floor pretty quickly. So I don't see why it would have to necessarily slow down their transition game.
I mean, you also have to get stops at the same time. So are you going to be a team that is trying to get more steals and plays up on you, where you want, again, more veteran players that know how to play that style? Because I don't think young players can really develop in that kind of system unless you have good players around them that can teach them that. Like, if you look at Toronto, for example, you bring in a player like Terrence Davis into that system where it's like hyper-aggressive. You rotate and you rotate back, and you know exactly which players you have to go. Even though it looks like chaos out there, there's a plan in place, right?
Yeah.
And you just haven't seen that from Atlanta, and you need to develop that over the course of a couple of years in order for it to work going forward. So I just don't see that from them. And it's going to take them a few years to really gain trust in their system. And they, again, have to choose in their offensive system, are they going to go with just like purely Trae Young just running pick and rolls all the time? Or are they actually going to branch out and try to give guys like, you know, Herter and Reddish some opportunity with the ball, because they didn't really get a lot this year. And I think that sort of irked a lot of their players too.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be interesting to see, because, I mean, the guy's already a starting caliber all-star. So if they don't get someone big or someone that can complement Trae Young at that wing position soon, that guy could be out, like, walking out of there pretty damn quickly.
Sure, but at the same time, I think he has to sacrifice some of his numbers in order for their team to get better offensively. Because even though he's putting up, like, 29-10, they're, what, like, 20th in offense? So, I don't know.
Because the offense revolves around one player, man. Come on now.
Yeah, but I think that's a lot with Trae, too. Like, I think Trae wants that responsibility. Like, he wants to be one of the best point guards in the league, and he thinks that, you know, putting up these gaudy numbers is part of that, but winning is also part of it too. Like, I think they'll be better off if they're able to develop, you know, guys like Herter and Reddish and have them be like major options on offense to give their offense more of a, you know, more of a flow.
Mama mentality.
Don't think it's going to work there.
All right. Minnesota Timberwolves. We got to make these ones quick now. You got your boy Kat and D'Angelo Russell together finally after Kat's complaining all year. And they played a grand total of 25 minutes together this past season. Hooray. So now the question is, obviously, can Kat anchor the defense? Can the Wolves retain Malik Beasley, who was obviously huge for them after the trade acquisition in February? And just whether D'Angelo Russell can you know, sort of lead this team offensively as the point guard, right? We know what Kat can do. Can he do it consistently? And can they do it on the defensive end? Can D'Angelo Russell actually carry the team to something beyond a playoff appearance in the Eastern Conference? And can the role players, can Jarrett Culver, can Juan Hernan Gomez, and Malik Beasley keep up, you know, their shooting, essentially, right? Josh, man, you've been a big proponent of Kat over these years, and I'm not going to lie to you, I don't see it.
You don't see what?
I don't see Kat being a number one option for a solid playoff team.
I think he can be if you build the right team around him. I mean, how many years has he had good players around him that actually fit? Maybe one with Jimmy Butler. But I think with that team, there's just an influx of talent. And just having like a really talented starting five around him ultimately got them to the playoffs. But especially in the Western Conference, like, you need a solid 8-man rotation in order to actually give you a chance to make the playoffs, first of all. But second of all, like, defensively, they're just a disaster. Like, he's not a defensive anchor, clearly, and he's not going to be, but I think that he's like one of the best, you know, offensive players of all time in terms of being at the big man position. Like, wow. Compare, I mean, look at his numbers, wow, and what he does on the, wow, floor. Like, how many offensive players as a big are as good as Kat? There's not many out there, especially with him shooting in the threes that he does.
You can say right now, but not all the time. Let's relax.
Yeah, don't even...
He's getting there, man. If he's shooting 10 threes a game at 42% or whatever he's at this year, and he gets some help around him, like, I think that they could eventually go somewhere. Not next year, obviously, but That team now has new management in place. They had Gerson Rosas, who used to be part of the management team in Houston. So you would hope there's actually something there where he's actually going to build something out and not just continue this malaise of crap coming into Minnesota. It's been bad the last few years, man. Like, Butler, brought them up a notch, obviously, but then that just turned to shit, obviously. But I don't know. They're a long ways away from being something. I think that he's probably going to be the next superstar caliber player that asks out the next 1 to 2 years.
I could definitely see that.
Their ceiling with their current setup is sixth place in the West. That's their ceiling. And their floor is like 13th. And I'm not saying they're going to go to sixth, but that's like the best they can be in their current roster. If they make a big move, that changes a lot. And I look at this team as a poor man's Denver Nuggets. Like, they have Jokic. Sorry, Denver has Jokic. Minnesota has Kat. Jamal Murray is D'Angelo Russell. And then you have a bunch of other players that can play roles, but they're not really well-defined. And I personally think Minnesota is probably going to struggle a bit. And I think maybe they might be in the contention for a playoff spot next year, but there'll be like a 9-10 team probably for the next 2 years until they make a real drastic move.
Yeah.
They're 2 years away from being 2 years away.
Oh, that was pretty good. Man, what a crap team. I am not a believer in this team whatsoever. I haven't liked that team since Butler left. Huh?
Going back to Atlanta and like the identity thing, I think that Minnesota should just dive straight in and just try to average 130 points a game and just have Russell and Beasley and whoever else with Cat play absolutely no defense and just try to run teams off the court. That should be their identity. Because they're not going to play any defense with those two guys in the backcourt and Cat at the rim. So you might as well just dive straight in and try to be the greatest offensive team of all time.
I mean, I totally agree. What's the point of even pretending to try?
Yeah, but it's not going to happen overnight.
No, that's true, but let's just hope that these
guys... They were averaging a lot of points since that trade, though.
Because they're running gun now. Malik Beasley has dropped in like 20-something points a game. It's wild.
Exactly. So just dive straight into it. Go even further with it. Just play play the 4-on-5 offense, you know? Just keep one guy, keep Cat underneath the rim on offense and just throw him the ball every time if you actually get a rebound and just average 160 points a game. That's what I want to see from them.
Yeah. That means they got to bring back Kevin Love to get those elbow passes.
That's okay. He's available.
Speaking of Kevin Love, this might be the worst team in the league next year. The Cavs are going into this with Kevin Love. Who else is there? Andre Drummond, Darius Garland, Colin Sexton, and Chetty Osmond as a starting five, presumably. Obviously, we don't know where the draft pick is going to go, but my God, is there a worse starting five in the league? There probably is, and it's going to come up after.
No.
Really? I beg to differ, because the Detroit Pistons will have nobody. They will have Derrick Rose, Luke Kennard, Sekou Doumbouya, and Blake Griffin. They don't even have a five. They don't need a five.
You're forgetting somebody.
Yo, Christian Wood is out the door. There's no way that dude stays in Detroit. He's going to get paid.
Mm-mm. He's going to get paid by Detroit.
Yeah,
that's true. Also, Blake Griffin being in that lineup makes their starting five better than Cleveland.
Than Andre Drummond. and Kevin Love.
Oh, like Derrick Rose played well the last couple of years, so just those two guys alone make them better than Cleveland.
Ooh, I mean, I'm glad to hear at least Detroit isn't going to be the worst team in the league.
Mm-mm.
But my God.
But yeah, with Cleveland, like, what I just want to see from them is them choosing their point guard. Like, it has to be Garland or Sexton. You can't play those guys at the same time, and neither guy is going to want to back up the other. So they need to make a decision as to which guy they're going to choose going forward.
I like Garland. I think that's it.
Me too.
Yeah. Sexton hasn't... he's on and off too much. And he's kind of like Pat Bev, but without the defense. Offensively, he reminds me a lot of Pat Bev, so I would take a hard pass on him. The Pistons, I mean, we can touch on this quickly, but I think the most exciting part of this is Josh Smith is finally off their book. They have literally like $75 million guaranteed for next year. So you're obviously looking at Blake Griffin And then otherwise, you got like Derrick Rose, Luke Kennard, and Dumbuya, like I said. And Tony Snell has a player option. That's my bad. But that's it, man. This Detroit team has like no money going next year, and they have like half a roster. It's going to be a team full of random guys that they pull up from the G League or the random vet mins that they pull in, but there's very little hope for this team for next year, I'd say.
Yeah, but I think one thing that needs to be mentioned is they're still a better destination for players than the New York Knicks. It's something. Ouch. It's something.
Ouch. Damn. Do we want to talk about the Hornets at all? I mean, this team might be the new... Remember that team? Remember they existed kind of team? Like, is there even a point to talking about these guys? Nicholas Batum is going to cash in on his payday. Devonte Graham was somehow in, like, all-star conversations, which is just wild to me. But there's really not much else about this team. Like, who cares? Bismack Biyombo is finally off the books. So that's nice. I mean, he's probably not going to get paid like that ever again. But I think that's it.
Charlotte is so bad that Raj is looking at his arm to see if there's veins in his arm while you're talking about Charlotte. That's how bored he got.
Yeah, I'm pretty focused on anything but Charlotte. Like, I kind of forgot they existed. And honestly, like, this team is... I think they're worse than Detroit. I actually do think so. Because at least Detroit's made the playoffs. They're entertaining. And Charlotte's just where... bad contracts go to die.
The thing is, though, like, Charlotte's contracts are finally going to be off the books, I think, next year. And I think that they actually have a good coach in place. I think Borrego's actually pretty good. Like, the fact that they won so many games this year with the roster that they have right now is pretty impressive. So I think when you compare them to a team like Detroit, I think the main thing that differentiates them is Borrego's a way better coach than Casey. And if you gave Christian Wood to Borrego, that team is making the playoffs.
If you give Christian Wood to almost anyone but Dwayne Casey, they're going to do very well. You know what I mean? All right. Well, I think that's it, guys. We've gone through like the worst teams in the league. Obviously, these guys aren't going to be in Orlando, so I wanted to give them a little bit of love. Shout out to a lot of these guys who've already cashed out, like Bismack and Nicholas Batum. Keep getting your money, boys. And I'm calling it here. So, I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe on iTunes. You can find us on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, all the major podcast networks. We're on Instagram and Twitter at Stretch4Pod. And until next time, peace.